COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
It's loose. Vaughan! What a good save that is from Carl Leatheren. We were right behind that and it looked like it was arrowing into the bottom corner.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with this week's guest, who is a goalkeeper like many before him on this podcast, has endured the highs, the lows, the player of the years, the promotions, the relegations, and everything else you can think of during an 18-year career. Once described as a rising star of the game, he's been north of the border, west of the border, almost 8,000 miles south of the border, and boasts two successful trips to Wembley alongside a Scottish Championship winner's medal. Son of a goalkeeper and currently goalkeeper coach at Doncaster Rovers, Carl Leatheren, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Cheers, delighted to be here. And I'm sure my dad sent you that intro, did he? Because it's all downhill from there.
Well, he got a mention. We thought we should mention him because you are, of course, the son of a goalkeeper.
Yeah, I am, yeah. So, you know, fortunate. I had an inbuilt goalkeeping coach at home, which I'm sure many other kids never had, you know what I mean? So, obviously, I was very fortunate on that. And I'm sure we'll get onto that in a bit. So, He's been a stonewall in my career and very thankful as well for that.
Well, we certainly will. We are at the moment, as with every podcast, I always say I like to set the scene. So we're sat on a stage, actually, in quite the room in the Alverthorpe Working Men's Club.
Yeah, what a place.
Been here before?
I've never been here before, but I can imagine there's going to be many scenes going off in this place over the years. But it's a first, but probably the last as well.
So are you from in and around this area, or you live in and around this
yeah,
area?
Yeah, I live in and around this area. I was born and raised in a town in Wales called Llanelli, a big rugby town. Then I did my first year YTS at Swansea and obviously went on from there to Barnsley, etc. But then I came to Barnsley and met my now wife when I played for Barnsley. Pretty much in the first season there. Now I'm two kids later, 18 years later, still living in Wakefield.
Standard story there, isn't
it? Yeah.
So with every podcast, we begin with some quick fire questions. I haven't warned you about these, but they're quite easy, so don't worry about it. Sometimes they end up being a bit longer, but we'll get into them. The first one is, what gloves did you wear as a goalkeeper throughout your career?
I've worn probably three throughout my career. It was back in the day when I first started, it was Cellsport was a hot thing to wear. So I wore Cellsport for the first 4 or 5 years. Then I went, when I played for Plymouth, I moved to HO. Dave Smalls at HO sorted me out there because obviously he had a big contact with Luke McCormack at the time and I loved them as well. Then when I moved to Salford, I went with Callier and I've been with them ever since and loved them, to be fair. So quality glove, and they market the gloves really, really well. And Kenny Arthur's done really well with it. And I wear the Joe Hart model now. You know, obviously I've done for the last few years, and probably one of the most comfortable glove I've ever worn. And like I said, you need to trust your hands, don't you? And yeah, I don't think I'd ever change now.
Seems to be the go-to model, doesn't it? The Joe Hart model.
It's just comfortable. Obviously, you know, some probably the most comfortable fitting glove. I like a tight glove on my hand. And that's exactly what they are. You know, when I first put them on, you know what I mean? You know, don't you? As a goalkeeper, when you first put a glove on, if they're for you or not. And I don't think I'd ever change now. And he's applied me for the last sort of 6-7 years, probably.
Okay, next one is favourite kit that you've worn.
Worn? Or
to be fair, no, it could be one that you've seen as well.
Right. You got me there. Just growing up, I think, one of my heroes, Peter Schmeichel, that green one with the zip, used to see him wearing. Obviously, I was a Leeds fan, to say that about somebody about, you know, in Man United, but that's the one that sort of springs to mind, you know what I mean? I remember myself, obviously, you know, wanting it and wanting to wear it and playing against the garage door with my brother, pretending to be Peter Schmeichel, and obviously that's the kit that sort of stands out in my memory, you know what I mean?
most memorable save?
Oh, there's a scenario. There's a scenario behind this one. It'd be for Dundee. Last game of the season, we were 1 point on top of the table, and we needed a match or beat Hamilton. Aki's result, and we had an 8-goal difference clear. We were eight goal difference in front of them. So we 2-0 up at half time. Hamilton were 4-1 up at half time. We come out second half, and I keep getting the ball from the crowd, and they keep saying it's 7-1, it's 8-1, and stuff like that. So next thing, Dumbarton end up getting a penalty and scoring. So there's a 1-goal swing. If Hamilton score or Dumbarton score, we stay down, Hamilton go up. And literally last kick of the game, there's a cross coming from the right, and their big centre forward risen above our opposite fullback, and he's headed it back across me. And if I cut my fingernails that morning, it would have gone in, put it that way. It was like full reach, took a little half volley bounce in front of me, and I've tipped it on the post in front of 15,000 packed out Dens Park, and it's got literally the best save I've ever made in my career, and that buzz that I've always been chasing afterwards. And then obviously went out for a corner came in, headed clear, we win the championship, and Hamilton stay down. So that scenario as well around that save, it meant a lot to a lot of people, and like I said, I've never had a buzz like that in my career.
So there was an 8-goal swing here. Hamilton win, what, 10-2 on the final day?
Yeah.
And they still don't go up.
And they still don't go up. And obviously, if that went in, obviously they would have gone up and we would have stayed down, you know what I mean? I'm sure there would have been inquiries into it, but that was the scenario. And, I don't think you'll ever see that again. And that buzz after that save, you know what I mean? Like I said, I've never had it again. And now I'm retired, I never will. But it's if you could bottle that feeling, it'd be one I'd buy multiple crates off.
We often talk about what makes a big save on the podcast, and that's it right there, right? That's a big save.
Yeah. Without bigging myself up, that's what I sort of did. I had this sort of knack of making big saves a big time, you know what I mean? Obviously, I was probably, League One, League Two goalkeeper at best, but I could pull out big saves at big times, and that's sort of a good knack to have in a way, you know what I mean? And that's, like I said, the right up there with, live long on the Dundee fans' memory, I'm sure.
And the final two, so I think you've answered this one already, goalkeeping icon, so that was Peter Schmeichel, I'm guessing.
Yeah, Peter Schmeichel, and I'd probably say as well, being Welsh, Neville Southall. Just love, the agility, the braveness, the low sense of gravity around the goal, the blocks, the power, that he had, and, he wasn't the biggest either, you know what I mean? But between them two, it'd be a great competition having them as a same club, wouldn't it?
Fantastic. I always think of having your best five-a-side team as well. Who would you choose?
Michael or Southall? Yeah,
exactly. I think I'd go with Neville Southall because he'd just fill up the entire goal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just big, brave, and some of the saves he made, you know what I mean? Like the agility, the speed around the goal for, that he wore. And obviously, I being Welsh, obviously, I grew up watching the Wales teams back then as well. Yeah, he was, what a keeper he was.
And the last one of the quick fires, the best goalkeeper that you've either played with or against, so one name.
I think I'd have to go, because he had an absolute worldie that day, was Craig Gordon. When he played for Celtic, he had that season when he was in Scotland for Celtic where he was absolutely unbelievable, and I think he got into Scotland and teams like that. And we played again at Dens Park, and the game could have been 4 each, but he just kept pulling worldies and worldies and worldies out, and I was like, wow, you know what I mean? What, such a big wingspan for such a big boy, and he got down one to the bottom corner, and like, you don't see guys that size getting down there that quick, and he tipped one onto the post. And I've just been an admirer ever since then. You know what I mean? When you watch them on TV and you see them live, it's completely different. And I was stood the opposite end, and I was just in awe of it, because he was just like, wow, and he got off the great left foot as well, you know what I mean? So yeah, just because of that game, really, it'd probably be Craig Gordon.
Excellent. Okay, well, we'll journey through some of your career as we always do on the podcast. You're now a goalkeeper coach, so we'll get into that as well, your philosophy, your methodology, how it's going for you at Doncaster. I've got a few notes here. I tried not to make too many, but there's a few. We'll start with the fact that you were born on Boxing Day. Is that right?
Boxing Day, yeah.
So was that difficult as a kid when you were growing up in terms of what you did on your birthday?
Yeah, to be honest, I grew up in a village called Davin back in Wales. And Boxing Day is big in it, so you know, it's just like one big birthday, really, Boxing Day. But I think you just get the two presents in the one for Christmas. Oh, I'll get you this as a two present instead of a one present. You know what I mean? They just add on to the one present. I didn't really mind it too much in the playing days, because Boxing Day you got fixture anyway, so you don't really celebrate. And then you got a game on the 28th anyway, so you've probably gone through the majority of my career not really celebrating it, you know what I mean? I always remember my 21st, obviously. Simon Dave made me travel to Burnley as a third choice. But, you know, 21st birthday, my parents wanted to throw me a party back in Wales. Simon Dave said no. So it was just one of them where you don't really, them sort of days as well, didn't really get to celebrate it. So hopefully I'm going to make up for it now I'm a coach.
I was going to say, are those sacrifices you actually have to make as a professional footballer?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And, you know, like I said, it's a short career. You've got to put it all in. But it's one that I wouldn't change for the world. You know what I mean? I've had 18 years doing, you know, what I love. Yeah, wouldn't change it.
You mentioned your parents there. So let's quickly touch on your dad. You said that we'll come back to it. So he's been a huge, huge influence in your career.
I used to get home from school and he used to have the balls, cones, everything ready, and we used to go down Davin Park. Right, we're off training today. So install that hard work. You know, you're not going to get there without work, hard work from day one. We used to bang balls and we'd down the park. He used to bring my brother down, and he even used to tell my brother leave a bit on him, because he knew that if I was going to make it, I had to be tough, because it's a tough environment, you know, walking into these buildings and stuff like that, walking into these clubs. And you know, my brother used to leave a bit on me, and we used to have little tiffs and scraps, and my mum used to sort it all out when we used to get home. And my dad used to just leave us to it, you know what I mean, just leave us to it. But he did it for that purpose, because he knew that if you're going to be a goalkeeper, you have to be tough, and you have to be mentally tough as well. So he used to, go leave a bit on him, you know what I mean. And again, thankful that he did. Because, again, without it, you know what I mean, I don't think I would have made it, because, you know, like I said previously, not many people get that beneficiary of having that at home, you know what I mean? Obviously, my dad's been Swansea keeper coach, Exeter keeper coach, Leicester keeper coach, you know what I mean? So that experience, UEFA pro licence holder, so, you know, pretty much everything he's done in his life, I've tried to carbon copy, really. So, you know, my hero, really.
Has he been involved in your professional career as well, in terms of advice, or do you keep that separate?
Yeah, it's been like I said, he's opinionated. So obviously, you know, if he's got something to say, he'll say it. If he thinks I could do something better, he'll say it. But at the same time, you know, you've also got to have that son-dad relationship. And to be fair, the balance, you know, he's managed it superb, to be fair. Picks you up when, because there's been plenty of lows along the way, as there is in goalkeeping. But you know, he picks you up, but he also, you know, will tell you straight on his thoughts as well, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's what you need, you know what I mean? Like I said, I've been fortunate, you know what I mean? I've been really fortunate on that front. You know, parents now have got to go spend X amount on private sessions for the kids, you know what I mean? I had that at home, you know what I mean? So, yeah, blessed.
Those private sessions, I guess that can link into the company that you currently have, Top Catch, right?
Yeah.
So are you in that with your father as well? Is he involved?
So my dad set it up probably about 10, 15 years ago now, and he took it to America and New Zealand and bringing all the best keepers back over to the UK. And he's been really successful with it. And obviously, over the last few years, he's had a bit of health issues. And I just rung him up one day, I said, look, I'm going to go, after I left Morecambe, I said, I'm going to go for the coaching stuff. I want to use your Top Catch. I want to promote it. I want to use the name and, you know, just turn on and go for it. And, you know, bought a van, bought all the equipment, and did a new website and stuff like that, and, you know, put it out there. My first session, 4 goalkeepers turned up. And you're thinking, you know, at the time, you know, have I done the right thing here? You know, I spent all this money on doing it and only this turned up. But, you know, 14 months down the line, I've got 2 venues and over 60 keepers coming to me a week for coaching, you know what I mean? So, you know, like I said, you've got to start somewhere. I put all my eggs into that basket and, I love it. You know, I love taking the kids as well because, like I said to you earlier, it's a blank canvas, you know what I mean? You can, when you see them running down the hill to you and buzzing for your session, it puts a smile on my face, you know what I mean? So I really like taking them age groups as well, where, you know, some won't, you know what I mean? Some don't like taking them, but I love it because it's, you can really delve into them and, you know, really put your stamp on them at an early age. And again, I want to go on and, you know, as I have done, put kids into these academies around Yorkshire, which have, you know, at the minute had a couple so far. So, it's been eventful. It's been tough, but you know, again, one thing I wouldn't change. You know what I mean? The coaching has just gone hand in hand. You mean the transition has been? I couldn't have asked for any more, really.
So I don't know whether you're aware, but you came up on the podcast quite a few times over the course of the past few years. So during your time with Salford, and then certainly with Morecambe. Now, I've got a feeling you're not going to appreciate this, but we refer to you affectionately as Kaleth. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. been called a lot worse.
So I noticed, obviously, you've retired recently. So in the summer you retired, there was a nice post online. And in that post, you said it's been a blast. Is that the best way that you can probably describe your career?
Yeah, like I said, my dad always said to me, the best education you'll ever have will be travelling. And I think I took that literal because I've been from one end of the country. You know, literally, I think one of my moves was Dundee to Plymouth. I don't think you can get a bigger commute, you know what I mean? And I've just gone around the country and said, look, there's been lots of tough times involved with it as well, you know what I mean? But there's not a lot I wouldn't change, you know what I mean? Obviously, the experiences of being, I've been a number three, two, one at all these various clubs, you know what I mean? I had to wait a long time to be a number one, established number one. And as soon as I did, my career sort of escalated really quickly. But yeah, it's been, like I said on the thing, that's the best way I describe it, absolute blast. I've loved every minute of it. But I just knew it was time for me, you know what I mean? Obviously, a lot of injuries in there as well. Every time I seemed to be going somewhere, you know, I got hampered with an injury. And after I left Morecambe, I just thought, right, now's my time. And thankful I did, really.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Can I run you through what I've taken from your career?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you mentioned about being a number one, and I think that's one of the key themes for me. There was two words as well that I always noticed: mutual consent. Yeah. That tended to crop up a lot in your career. So I'm going to really quickly do this, but you started at Swansea as a trainee. If I've got any of this wrong, just let me know. Released in 2006, you joined Barnsley there for 3 years, won half of football in the FA Cup. You then signed a short-term deal with Plymouth. That was the summer of 2009, although you were released in December. So at 22 years old, you were a free agent, which I guess is quite rare considering the start that you had to your career at Swansea and what was touted for you. So you were then without a club for 4 months. You were due to be signed by Motherwell, but the SPL blocked it because they'd had too many goalkeepers. So we're now in the summer of 2010. Trial with Kilmarnock. You signed there 3 seasons, handful of games. Summer of 2013, trial again, this time with Dundee, and boom, you're number one, player of the year, clean sheet records, promotion. 10 games into that next season, as you said, injured in the warm-up. Upon your return, injured again. So after the euphoria of the season before, you then get released at the end of that season. We then have Blackpool for a year. You then join York, again as a number one. You win the FA Trophy. More accolades come. You rejoin Plymouth, where you were before. You finally make your debut for them 8 years after initially joining them. You were 2 years there, offered a deal, turned it down to join Salford. You flip-flopped with Chris Neil as number one there. Then you went to Chesterfield, another half of a successful season there. We then have Morecambe, more success at Morecambe, and then at Hartlepool where you finished. But the key theme, like I said, whenever you were a number one, it seemed to basically have success with it.
Yeah, exactly. But I had to fight really hard to be number one at various different places, you know what I mean? And I was never really content in being a number two, you know what I mean? Because I was, at the start of my career, so much, I didn't want to be it through the rest. So if I wasn't playing, I'd just turn and say, look, let's try and, you know, cancel this by me. Let me move on. Let me try and go play somewhere else. You know what I mean? I'd always sort of, my dad said to me, look, always roll the dice. And one thing I say to my keepers now, one thing, if I had any regret about my career, it'd be at Barnsley. I sat on the bench nearly 100 times for Barnsley. And then when it came to them releasing me, other clubs will say, how many games you've played? And as you've reeled off there, half a game. You mean, so then I had to go, I went and signed for Plymouth for half a season. And then I went to go to Scotland and Cammy Bell was on fire there. And then I said, look, I need to be a number one now. I need to be a number one. And I went on trial at Dundee. And after that trial, they could not have signed me. Because literally I was that adamant I was going to be number one and that I put all my eggs, I've got to, this is my chance, this is my opportunity. And yeah, that paid off for me, you know what I mean? Obviously I was there, I think I played 48 times, kept 24 clean sheets for them. And that's where I just said to you, my career sort of escalated from that number one point, you know what I mean? And then, like I said, injuries and stuff like that, which I've explained about, sort of halted me every time when I felt like I got in the Welsh set up from, sat on the bench in the European, obviously qualifiers for Wales, et cetera, from the back of that at Dundee. And then it always just seemed like an injury sort of pulled me back. In the end, that's what's sort of made me retire in a way. Just like, look, what's longevity? Is longevity chasing the last few years or is longevity going into the coaching? Yeah, so like going out on loan probably at Barnsley. Like I couldn't, because I said, I sat on the bench and I was number two. You know what I mean? And, I said, when it comes to the fine details, how many games you played, they turn around and say, well, I played half a game in the FA Cup. Even the round after, we do Liverpool at Anfield. Manager pulls me in the office. He says, you're not ready for that. And in my heart of hearts, I knew I wasn't. I was 19. He brings in Luke Steele, and Luke Steele comes in and has man of the match at Anfield. We beat Liverpool 2-1 away at Anfield in the FA Cup. It pains me to say that, but I wasn't ready for that. You know what I mean? But yeah, just sort of chasing that number one around everywhere, not content to be a number two, you know what I mean? I think that's why the word sort of mutual consent comes up a lot, you know what I mean? Just wanting to play, you know what I mean? Because I had such a long period at the start of my career being a number two.
It's such a catch-22, isn't it? And we see it now, the problem with so many young goalkeepers and a goalkeeper like yourself who obviously had the ability that the club felt comfortable with, that's a great number two to have. But because you've only played a certain number of games, they then can go into the loan market and bring someone else in. Yeah. So yes, it's great to go and get the games and that's what you need. But also you need to have those games at a relatively decent level to then have some form of recognition for potential suitors. And on the flip side of that, you're playing in the FA Cup, you're on the bench at Wembley, right? In the semi-final of that competition. Yeah, so you're also getting invaluable experience that way. So it's so difficult to make that decision, especially as a young lad.
Yeah, it is. And it's hard to sort of brush that tag off when you've got it as well. Yeah. Everyone sees you as a number two, you know what I mean? So, like I said, for number two, multiple clubs, when's my chance going to come? When's my chance going to come? Kilmarnock, I had a taste of it. And then after that, it was like, look, I need to be number one now. I can't go somewhere else and sit on the bench because, after this, I'm probably, if I don't play, I'm done. You know what I mean? Or I'm going to have to go part-time or something like that. So, just sort of grasped an opportunity when it came along, really, and that would be Dundee, and that's probably why I've got such a strong place in my heart for that club, because it gave me that opportunity that I craved for so long. Like, you worked all them sessions at the back of the pitch with your dad back in Wales. All that was for that, you know what I mean? Yeah, so, like I said, don't regret a lot, but obviously if I could change something, it'd be, don't be that number two of bands, it'd be that, go out on loan, get wherever it is, get knocked about in them leagues where it means something to men that don't give a monkeys who you are. They'll elbow you if they need to. End of the day, they're putting food on the table for the kids, you know what I mean? Obviously that's what I tried to take into my coaching career with Hartlepool. Pat Boyce, literally three loan moves, the difference, phenomenal in him. Obviously that's not myself, by the way, that's him wanting to go out there, go on loan, take opportunities, grasp opportunities, and then he ends up getting signed for Fleetwood for an undisclosed fee. Which makes me, immensely proud. First year as a coach, selling a 20-year-old keeper that's, got released from Grimsby probably two seasons ago, you know what I mean? Probably my proudest moment so far as a coach, you know what I mean? And just loving the coaching now.
Opinions too, that's another thing, right? You have an opinion on Pat Boyce, very good goalkeeper, he goes on, but you've also said before, football is about opinions, right? But it's only yours, your opinion is the one that really matters.
Yeah, look, There'll be clubs that you could reel off there that would absolutely think I'm rubbish, and there'll be clubs there that think that I'm absolutely brilliant.
You rubbish, know what I mean? Really?
Yeah. There would be. You know what I mean? And there'd be clubs there that would say different. You know what I mean? So it's like I said, opinions. You can either take them to heart, or you can listen to people's opinions that matter. Your family, your dad, your keeper coaches, etc. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, it's narrowing that down in your mind that people are always going to have an opinion of you, but which opinion you take on board is your decision. You know what I mean? And that's something, again, probably my dad taught me. You know what I mean? You can listen to white noise all you want, but you get a small group of people's opinions and ask them, go to them, what do you think, and I did that, and it's enabled me to have, you know, 18 years in the game.
Yeah, having your board of directors, stuff now we refer to it. That's key, isn't it?
Absolutely.
One more quote I wanted to read to you as well was from 2021. So the big season with Morecambe, you were at Chesterfield for half a season. You made that executive to go, no, I've got a great opportunity here. And you were very transparent about that. Yeah. I'm going to go to Morecambe because I've got a really good opportunity. At the end of the term, after you'd gained promotion, you said, it's taken me to places emotionally I didn't know I had in me.
Yeah, like I said, it's, you know, having your mum, your dad, your kids, you know, at Wembley, something that you've trained again all your life for, to be able to keep 120 minute clean sheet at Wembley is what stuff, you know, you dream of, innit? You know what I mean? And to have you know, my son there, my wife there, you know, was emotional. You know what I mean? I'm not gonna lie, obviously, I remember going into the toilet at Wembley and just tears coming down my face, and you can probably sense my voice now. Probably even now it's emotional. You know what I mean? Yeah, just something you work continuously for your whole career. For their moments, and it just all came out, and you're just like, wow, you know, you've did it, I've achieved something that I've always wanted to, and yeah, satisfaction now is just the, you know, like you said, box ticked, you mean bucket list ticked, so it's, you know, like I said, something I'll always look back on and just cherish that my son was able to be there, my wife was able, my dad was able to be there, my mum, my brother, you know what I mean, all them people that foundations that help you through, you know, through them lows, which you've just mentioned as well. Like I said, loved every minute.
So let's move on to your coaching career then. You are now a coach. You got your A licence, what, about a year ago, was it?
Yeah, I got my goalkeeping A licence through the Welsh FA.
What was that like, taking an A licence? We've never actually asked that question.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I did mine in COVID, so everything was online.
Right.
So we didn't really get the real experience, you know what I mean? But we did everything through via Zoom, etc. And then... Look, there's certain aspects that I'll probably never use, but there's certain aspects that I always use as well. You know what I mean? It's eye-opening, and some stuff they say to you, and it makes you stand up and go, oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that. You know what I mean? And certain aspects of it. And others, you're thinking, yeah, I'll never use that. But you take from it what you need, you know what I mean, obviously. But I think even, you know, you rely on your experience more than anything. Like I said, I've had multiple coaches throughout them clubs that you mentioned, and I've taken, you know, aspects of them into my game. But I always say there's a person behind every goalkeeper, and getting them to know what makes them tick is my paramount, what I go to first, you know what I mean, what makes them tick. And I'm not... I have this argument sometimes with people that try and change who goalkeepers are. You know, at the end of the day, they are who they are. We can make them better. They're there for a reason. I try to make them better at what they're good at, not focusing on weaknesses and, you know, make them feel bad about, oh, they can't do this or they can't do that. I try and make them better at what they're good at while trying to change little technical details along the way, you know what I mean? You know, imagine me going in first aid to Doncaster and telling Ian Lawler, well, I don't think you're doing that right, you should be doing that. You know what I mean? It's not what I'm there for. I'm there to, you know, Ian Lawler's had a decent career. Lewis Jones said, you know, he's on a path to a decent career. I'm not there to change them. They're there for a reason. I'm there to make them better at what they're good at. You know what I mean? And, you know, if I can have change a few details along the way and improve, I'm there to improve performance for them, not to change their whole outlook on goalkeeping. You know what I mean? Which I've had coaches myself before that have said, you know, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong, and it just makes you feel uncomfortable. You know what I mean? They've done what they're doing for so many years. You know, can I change little details along the way? Yeah, but I'm there to improve their performance, not to change their style or techniques, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, like, I mean, you must have worked with so many goalkeeper coaches over the years. How much of it then, and you kind of alluded to it there, how much of it is taking stuff that you've seen over the years that you've learned, but also putting your own stamp on it as well. So your own drills, your own techniques, your own approach.
Yeah, like I said, I use now drills that keeper coaches used me years ago. John Lukic, Billy Thompson, you know, God rest his soul, who passed away this year. I still use their stuff to this day. But then you've just got to, look, the goalkeeper's evolving, so you've just got to put your spin on it, the way you see it, the way, you know, the way you want your goalkeepers to be, you know what I mean? And that's what I've done, you know what I mean? I've just sort of modernised it in a way, because obviously some of them techniques were 4 or 5 years ago, or even longer, you know what I mean? So how can, just be forward thinking and thinking, right, you know, the end of the day, the ball's travelling quicker, faster, the players getting quicker, stronger, faster, they're doing stuff a lot sharper, you know what I mean? So you've got to evolve with it. And, you know, like I said, I sit at home watching goalkeeping sessions and looking and thinking, yeah, I like that, but can I twist it to this? Can I, you know what I mean? So always learning, you can't learn enough, you know what I mean? And there's certain stuff that you say, oh, that's not my belief, you know what I mean? But there's certain stuff that I'll just go, yeah, I like that, but I'm going to add this bit on it, you know what I mean? It's, you know, you can constantly learn and constantly evolve on the coaching department and just putting your own twist in it. But like I said to you, I try to work with the person as well as much as I can, you know what I mean? Being relatable to them, because I've been a 1, 2, 3, so I know exactly how all of them are feeling. Some coaches have only been a 1 and they don't know how that 2 feels, you know what I mean? Or some have only been a 2 and didn't know what it's like to be a 1, you know what I mean? So I like to think, obviously, that's what will stand me in good stead for a good coaching career, because I've got really ambitious in my coaching department. I want to go to the very top, you know what I mean? That's my ambition. And, you know, 2 years in full-time coaching and 2 jobs, I've had a good start, you know what I mean? So, and long may that continue.
So where do you stand? This is another question we often ask goalkeeper coaches. You said there you have to be relatable to them. Where do you stand on being a coach, being a colleague, being a mentor, but also being a friend and a shoulder to cry on, but someone that someone, you know, can go for a coffee with?
Yeah, I think you have to, because, you know, the person's just as important as the goalkeeper, you know what I mean? The person is the goalkeeper, you know what I mean? So if they've got any issues, I want to be approachable. I want them to let me know. I want them to let me know my thoughts, what they're thinking. You know what I mean? Because, you know, something might be going off at home that I don't know about that might be affecting the performance end of the day. So that's part of being a coach, in my opinion. You've got to know the job lot. And obviously, at the start, you've got to build them relationships with them people, you know what I mean? And, you know, as goalkeepers, you've always got a strong knit union, you mean? Because you're all after the same goal, really, and you know what I mean? So you know how tough the position can be. So as well as the coaching, I like to indulge into them as a person as well, and getting to know, you know, I want to know the kids' names, I want to know the wife's name, you know, I want to know the lot, just because then I know if something's up with them in the long run, I can ask them, or they can come to me, you know what I mean? So it's really, really important for me to get to know them like on that level as well, not just come to work, this is what we're doing today, no relationship with them. I like to have a really close relationship, and I managed to do that at Hartlepool, and hopefully I can carry that over to Doncaster now.
You said that you watch sessions. Do you speak with other goalkeeper coaches as well?
Yeah, I speak to a couple. Obviously, Joe Murphy at Tranmere. Obviously, we always bounce. We both got a goalkeeping school. We always bounce ideas off each other and stuff like that. And obviously, when I go on these courses, like I just met Darren Ward, the England Lionesses goalkeeper coach, and we sat down and we had breakfast together and we talked about goalkeeping. You know what I mean? I could sit there for hours.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? And you know, just bouncing ideas off each other. And it's all input to me, you know what I mean? Because obviously, I'm on the start of the journey, you know what I mean? And I want to get to where the likes of, you know, Wardy's at or whatever, you know what I mean, working for England, working for, you know, Wales, that's the dream when it comes to the coaching sort of side of it for me.
I saw a couple of your sessions too, some of the stuff that you've posted on Twitter, on LinkedIn over the years. Great, yeah. LinkedIn profile, by the way, very thorough.
You've got to be, haven't you?
There were a couple. One of them was on an absolute cow field of a pitch. I think you had like 7 goalkeepers, no cones, no hurdles, nothing, just very raw, very basic.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was during lockdown when we just allowed out. So I'm bored, yeah. What, you know? So I messaged, set up a WhatsApp group and stuff like that. Any keepers want some coaching, sort of thing. So that was like sort of right at the very start, you know what I mean? That was like, you know, probably my first session putting on, you know what I mean? A lot's been learned since then, you know what I mean, as well. So, you know, would I put that session on again? Probably not. But
sure.
Again, you evolve, don't you? You see stuff, you want to do, and then you remember sessions from that you used to do, etc. Over the years, and like, again, just putting your twist in it. You know what I mean? And you know, try to get the best out the goalkeepers that you've got.
Great one I saw at Hartlepool as well. I think you've got you're basically testing foot saves from close range and reflex. You've got the two goals on an angle, basically adjacent to each other. That's a great drill.
Yeah, and it's one I'm fond of as well because. And some, you know, the keepers that work with me, I'm big on using your feet when necessary as well. You know what I mean? Because the ball, especially from close distances, you know, you can't, you know, your brain's not quick enough to get your hands down there when the ball's coming from 5-6 yards away. So why not use what's already down there? You know what I mean? To get rid of it. So something I'm big on is obviously that, and you know, staying back, putting pressure on the attacker. You know, at the end of the day, the attacker wants you to move. You know what I mean? Staying back, putting pressure on the attacker only. We can only block really when you can get close enough to the ball and stuff like that. Something, you know, all which I try initiate in my sessions along the way. So it's that's probably my favourite sort of element. You know, if you've got a favourite session to do, it'd be probably that. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of decision when you come, when do you stay back. You know what I mean? That sort of element of the decision. You know what I mean? Can you teach the decision, not just, you know, anyone can go there and just serve balls and have some volleys. See if you can get them to think about the decision they're making as well in the goal, because you've got split seconds to make it. You know what I mean? So if you can get that timing impeccable, you know what I mean, when they do come through one on one, right? I'm staying back. I said, right, he showed me too much of a bang. You're on top of him. You know, them sort of sessions I love to do, and you see lots of it. You know what I mean, like through balls and stuff like that. Can I smother it? Can't I? You know, do I have to stay back? All you're making 5, 6, 7 decisions in split seconds. You know what I mean? And the more you do it, the better you're going to get it, in my opinion. I mean, so it's, it's something, you know, like I said, you know, I love it. I love the coaching just as much as I did the playing.
I can really sense that. And you are at the start, as you said, of your goalkeeping journey. And this isn't to say that goalkeeper coaches who've been in the game for 20 plus years get a bit tired and think, oh, do you know what, I've got to go out on the grass again today. But you've only recently retired. You can really feel the enthusiasm for you. Are you loving it at the moment? You just get excited about going to work?
Yeah. Like I said, I don't have to be into late. I'm there at 7:30. I'm just like, and I'm like the staff are like, are you already set up, Kyle? You know what I mean? And I'm like, yeah, you know what I mean? I've got that buzz for it. And it's still, you know, and when I lose that, I know I'm not in the right thing. You know, I'm not in the right line of work anymore. You know what I mean? Just love being on the grass and with the keepers every day, and you know, trying to make them better. That's, you know, that's what I'm, you know, that's what I'm there for. But it's, like I said, love it just as much as the playing. There's been no love lost at all. But when it comes to that sort of thing, yeah, half decent, okay playing career. You know, but I want to go on and better what I did in playing, in my playing career, in my coaching.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
More than happy to just drift into space. That's a tasty effort, and it had to be turned away by Leatherin.
And it really is, because I feel it was just going in that bomb corner.
Well, before we get on to a bit of fun and games as the podcast ends, I've got a few names I'd like to throw your way. We often do this as well, guys that you've played with over the years or encountered in some ways. First one is Willy Gueret at Swansea. So you were a young lad when he was... I can already see by the smile on your face. Funny fella, good lad?
I was scared to death of him.
Really?
French, big persona about him. Absolutely massive. My first year as a YTS, and an absolute unit, and very harshly spoken. And he used to absolutely leather it at me, you know what I mean? And obviously, going in first day, I was nervous, etc. Yeah, I always remember Willie just being big, aggressive, and absolute monster as well. I remember we played Plymouth away in reserve game. I think we got battered 4 or 5, I think it was. I was a first year pro playing Plymouth away, lost 4 or 5, and I walked in the next day, and back then you've got college on the day off, you've got to go to college, and I walked past them sort of thing, and he pulled me and went, "Oh, you, what are you doing?" I was like, "What are you on about? I got college." He said, "You conceded 5 last night. You shouldn't be at college. You should be out here doing this." And you can imagine 16-year-old looking at a giant like that. I was like rubbing the headlights, absolutely petrified of him. But again, you know, it just stands you in good stead. Another experience that I've experienced. You know what I mean? Like I said,
did you go to college or did you stay at training?
I had no option. But like I said, I wouldn't have fancied going out with him at that stage anyway, because he was on me when I was walking past. Can you imagine how I got in the session? But college was compulsory. But scared to death of it's a great experience though.
You played with a lot of foreign goalkeepers during that period of time, didn't you? A lot of guys who, to be fair, I've never even heard of before.
Yeah, I played a lot. Like I said, again, when watching their styles and technique, Heinz Müller at Barnsley was another one, you know what I mean? Big giant of a man, you know what I mean? Jeez, I've never seen anyone come across like it, you know what I mean? Just used to pluck it out of the air. He was 6'7", 6'8", monster. And if he came in the box, you knew it was his. Like, and you just stood there and, oh, you know, I wish I could do that. You know what I mean? Back then. So, yeah, there's been a lot, you know, different styles, different techniques along the way. And like I said, they're not for everyone. You know what I mean? You've got your own style. Like I said, if every goalkeeper was the same, it'd be a boring old position, wouldn't it? You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's been a blast. Like I said, like I keep going back to.
Neil Sullivan. At Doncaster, so yeah. You were there for a brief period. He was injured at the time.
Yeah, I was there for 3 months with. Obviously, I ended up being third choice because Luke Steele signed at Barnsley at the time, and Doncaster said, "Look, obviously you're not going to play, but do you fancy coming?" I said, "Well, at least I'm going to be involved with you." You know what I mean? I'm here, and I went there, and what a pair of hands Neil Sullivan had! Probably one of the best pair of hands I've ever. Everything just stuck. You know what I mean? Obviously, you know, I was dropping a couple with it, but there was. Lee Butler at the time could serve a ball, you know, bashing at you, and what a pair of hands he had. Probably one of the best pair of hands I've ever trained with, you know what I mean? And his experience and just, you know, like I said, I'd be trying to parry stuff away, I'd just trying to be content with keeping it out, like, and Sully was like, "Do you think you're good enough to catch that?" You know what I mean? And it just sort of stuck with me, you know what I mean? Yeah. Fair enough, if I make an odd mistake in training, so be it, you know what I mean? That's what you're here for. And he was like, I think you're parrying a bit too much, trust your hands sort of thing. And I went on from there and just, you know, took it on board, you know what I mean? And, and a great guy as well.
Michael Cooper, so he would have been, well, he's still a young lad now, but a very young lad when you were there. Can you see him getting to the top?
Michael Cooper made his debut for me. Blackburn away, I think the 35th minute, when a kicker goal kick. Ruptured my quad, grade 3 rupture. I ended up being out for 6 months. And Michael and the manager at the time didn't want to put a 17-year-old on after 32 minutes, so he made me play the rest of the half with the ruptured quad. So I ended up going to the edge of the box and throwing it out my hands to give him a warm up to come on for half time. And I ended up conceding. Bradley Dax called one past me. They made me throw everything out. Out my hands because they were stood at me because they knew I was injured at the time. He blasted one at me. I couldn't move, and it's about 5 yards where it's gone through my legs, and I just fell back. And I've even had to go get one of the guys to help me up. You know what I mean? On one leg, Michael Cooper came on and had an absolute worldie at 17 years of age. Away at Ewood Park, and obviously after the game buzzing, I was like, "Coop, couldn't you come on in 12 minutes earlier?" No? But you could always tell. Could always tell in training, great pair of hands, great desire, quick around the goal, quick off the floor, athlete. You know, he threw a ball like I could only dream to. Like, you know, he played a lot of cricket, I think, back in the day, and you could just tell, like, he'd whiz a ball out the left and right fullback. Needed a bit of work on his feet back then, but I'm watching him now, and by half as he worked on it, you know what I mean? A great temperament about him as well. And yeah, one I can see going again because I've got no qualms about Michael going, you know, he could go all the way.
And last one, bit different, Tyson Fury.
Yeah, To be fair, I know his masseuse. He was the
oh, really?
He was the masseuse at Salford when I was at Salford. So obviously being at Morecambe, and he was his masseuse. And obviously my dad does a charity dinner back in Wales. And so he's pestering me, look, will you get me a pair of gloves? Will you get me a pair of gloves? And will you, wait outside the gym because it's attached to the Morecambe thing? So I said, look, I'm going to give Matty a message. So I message him. I said, look, mate, I know you probably get this message a billion times. I said, look, my dad's on me. He wants a pair of Tyson Fury gloves for the thing. And then I remember staying up. He rung me and went, where are you? And he said, I'm staying up. We've got a game tomorrow, early kickoff. He went, get yourself down to the gym now. Tyson's agreed to meet you and sign these gloves for you. So hop straight in the car, straight down there. I remember him jumping outside the car. And obviously I've got big fists. His one was two of mine.
Really?
Monster. And I just remember looking up at him and he shook my hand and they were like shovels. And it was that around that time when he was agreeing a fight with AJ. And he even said to me, you fancy coming for a spar or what? And he think, yeah, you think I'm that stupid? Yeah, no, he obviously joking probably at the time. But yeah, monster of a guy as well, you know what I mean? So he was...
That's too, because, I mean, you're a big guy, yeah, right? Up against Tyson. Yeah. Although, if I can say this, you're actually not as big as I thought you were. Yeah, do you know, from when I see you on TV...
As in height or wide?
I'm going to say wide. In the nicest possible... Not that you're... I don't mean that in a negative way, but you're definitely trimmer than I thought.
my dad always used to say to me, he said, goalkeeper kids do you no favours. You know what I mean? Because I was never the highest body fat. I was never the lowest either. But like I said, I remember being at Swansea as a young boy. I was the fittest there. I run rings, and Barnsley would say the same. I could run. If you ask Simon Davey, if you ask Kenny Jackett, no. I remember another story. Kenny Jackett, we played against him at Portsmouth, and he pulled me after the game. We just drew one each, I think it was. And he went, can you still run like that, by the way? Because that's the best run I've still seen to this day. I could run, you know what I mean? So obviously I was fit, and obviously I've just got obviously bigger, natural, more you grow into your body sort of thing. I'm a thick set as well, you know what I mean? I've got big shoulders and big bum. and it's just, you know, something that obviously if you've seen all my family walking, you know, you'd be like, yeah, you'd understand why I am, because they're all just 6'3", 6'4" plus massive. Like, I'm small compared to my dad's brothers and stuff like that, you know what I mean? So it's just a big family, and I've got a big thick set of legs as well, you know what I mean? But, you know, one thing I have always been, which people tell me as well, like, you might be big but you're still quick. You know what I mean? You can be as... sometimes you get people that are that big that ain't, you know what I mean? But obviously I still managed to keep that sort of speed around the goal, you know what I mean? So obviously, you know, like I said, I can only go off what they're saying, you know what I mean?
Just quickly on that, did that ever represent issues during your career? We talk about perception a lot, that people saw you in a certain way.
Yeah, like I said, opinions. They can have their opinions of me. You know, some, like, I always got the, oh, you fat. Can't say it live on you, but everywhere I went, I used to love it. I used to chuckle along with it, you know what I mean? It's just part and parcel of the game, you know what I mean? Did I go and cry about it? Absolutely not, you know what I mean? Did I give my wife a few laughs along the way? Absolutely, you know what I mean? But like I said, it's just part and parcel, and it's great cracking of everywhere. It makes you play a bit better, in my opinion. I mean, you love that sort of... If you don't like that sort of stuff, then playing in the wrong position, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, look, before we get to Richard Lee's final question of the podcast, it's a new feature, which is a quiz on you that we title Carl Etheren, How Well Do You Know You? First one, how many clubs have you played for, not been at, played for?
Wow, well, that's a question, because I've been at a lot and not played. didn't play for Swansea, played for Barnsley one. See, I don't even know my own career. Went to Plymouth, didn't play for Plymouth first time round. Went to Kilmarnock, played for them, so that's two. After Kilmarnock, I went to Dundee, that's three. After Dundee, I went to Blackpool, that's four. After Blackpool, I went to York, that's five. After York, I went to Plymouth, that's six. After Plymouth, I went to Salford, that's seven. After Salford, I went to... Now it's getting tougher. It's getting closer, but it's getting tougher. After Salford, I went to Chesterfield, so that's eight. Chesterfield, I went to Morecambe, that's nine. I was wondering if I missed any in there. And Hartlepool.
There you go. Yeah, just last season, yeah.
Knockout, yeah. 10 out of 10.
So, 10 out of 10. I've got one more. You play one game on loan, I believe.
Oh, yeah, yeah. To be honest, probably the best, if there's one to think that you're on about, Newport, yeah?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Salisbury away. Lost 4-1. They clocked on. I was 16 years of age before the game. And they absolutely launched everything on top of me and battered me from pillar to post. And the best experience that I've... look, I had a shocker probably. There's no problem about it. Shocker, you know what I mean? I think they scored 3 or 4 set pieces and they bashed me about everywhere. They won 4-1, whatever it was. And I came off that park and I was like, wow, what was that? And it was like, that's exactly what you want to go out and loan for as a young boy. And that's why I'm so keen on it when now I've gone into coaching. And like I said, probably the best experience, but I never managed to get that at Barnsley where I went, because like I said, I was second choice, but I wanted to go out and, you know, I want that, you know what I mean? Fair enough, it might be tough and fair enough, it might make a few mistakes along the way, but the best experience at that age that I ever had.
Brilliant.
Even though I had a nightmare.
What a question, brilliant. More layers to that question. Yeah, yeah. Next one, what leagues have you played in?
National League, League 2, League 1, Scottish Prem, Scottish Champ, Conference South, and...
I think that's it. Is there more?
Yeah, there is more. And I played for Port Talbot on loan from Swansea as well, in the Welsh Premier League.
There we go, see?
Yeah.
Didn't know that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I played for a couple of games for them in the Welsh Premier League, yeah, on loan. Which probably isn't on Wikipedia either, is it? I wouldn't imagine.
To be fair, it's not on any searching, because I tried to keep away from Wikipedia, only substantiated references, but I'd not found that Port Talbot, no.
Yeah, yeah, I played, it was 4 or 5 games for them on loan in the Welsh Premier League, yeah.
Gosh, were you younger than you were?
That was after Newport.
Right.
Yeah, the experience after Newport, which was calmer waters than the Conference South, you know what I mean? And I was a teeny bit older then. I think it was a second year then as well.
Yeah. Okay, against whom did you make your pro debut and what was the score?
Pro debut was half-time substitute to Blackpool at home for Barnsley. And we won 2-0. Michael Coulson scored the winner and took all the limelight off my debut. Because it was his debut as well.
Almost got that right. It's 2-1. You came on at 1-0 down.
Oh, that's right,
so
yes.
You kept the clean sheet, but they'd already scored.
Yeah, Heinz Müller came off. Yeah, he did a cruciate. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So after making your pro debut in which you kept a clean sheet, it took 4 years, 4 months and 7 days before you conceded your first goal. Who was that against? Would have been for Kilmarnock.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think, did I play a cup game first or did I play a league game first? I can't remember. But I'm going to go for the league game first. Dunfermline?
Correct. Very good. You saved a header. You've spoken about this already on the final day of the 2013-14 campaign to ensure Dundee won the Scottish Championship title. Who was that header from?
I know the surname. Can I say surname?
You can.
Prunty.
Prunty, yes. Graham Prunty.
Yeah.
Of Dumbarton. Very good. You also kept a post-war clean sheet record in all competitions for the club that season. How many was it? You equaled Rab Douglas.
It's one or two and they're both next to each other. So I'm going to go up greedy on the greedy side and say for 20.
I'd stop there.
20.
Yeah. 19 in the league, 20 in all competitions. Very good. I don't know whether that is still the record, but I'd imagine it maybe is. In what season was your brief loan spell at Doncaster?
2000. To be fair, the worst part about it is 15 years ago, so 15 off now is 2000 and... Oh. 9-10 season?
8-9.
Oh,
that's so close.
I get half a point, no?
The shirt sponsor in your season with Salford?
Sky Bet?
Very close. It was Soccer Saturday Super 6.
Oh, yes, it was.
Very niche.
Yeah.
Very niche. I would like you to name, if you could, the back line in front of you on your playoff final triumph with Morecambe. I believe... they went with a back three.
Yeah, obviously Jan Tsongo sort of stepped in from the... I think we started with a four, but he stepped back, obviously, because they were having the better of the game. So, Ryan Cooney. It would have been Sam Lavelle, Jan Tsongo, Knight Percival. Is it?
He was in there.
And then the other one was Liam Gibson.
Correct. Very good. Very impressive. So far, that's been a good return from the goalkeepers that we've asked. They've all been able to name their back lines. And the last one, just because I want to hear it, the name of the village in Anglesey in Wales is referred to as, can you pronounce it? The Gogogoch.
I cannot, no.
Okay, you can't do it? No,
no, not while speaking. Unfortunately, we got taught it in school. I passed it as a GCSE. Only the one things I did pass, by the way, but no, I can't pronounce it. No, it's too many go-go-go-go-go-go-goss for me.
Excellent. Okay, well, we've come to the end of the podcast. At the end of every podcast, Richard Lee asks his favourite question, which is...
And here I am for the 10-second cameo appearance. But it is the most important part of the show, Mr. Carl Leatheran. What has goalkeeping given you?
What a question. It's given me everything, really. It's given me a livelihood, you know what I mean? It's enabled me to live my dream for 18 long years. And, you know, it's now enabled me to have another career as well. In coaching, so obviously all I've ever known really, and obviously all I've been brought up through, obviously with the dad as well, is goalkeeping. So yeah, goalkeeping's given me a hell of a lot, and I think it's now time to repay it on the other end, but you know, with the coaching.
Carl Leatheran, thank you very much for joining us.
No, it's a pleasure.
But a really good strong hand from Leatheran.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.